So this is how to open a bed and breakfast, a guest house, an Airbnb, a VRBO, or even a midterm rental. And my name is Kathy Benner. I'm a passive income coach. I also have an online academy under kathybenner.com. So you can find me and you can scroll down and listen to all of our free replays right there at kathybenner.com. But you also can tap over and join our mastermind. So we have a mastermind getting ready to start. And with us today, I have Adam Messmer. He is my co-host, my co-mod. And while I'm thinking about it, I am actually going to click through and make him my co-host. So in case I get bumped off, he'll let me back in, hopefully. And I'm also going to make Andora. She is our presenter today, and I'm going to make her a co-host as well. So all three of us are co-hosts. The rest of you will be actually in the audience. This is a webinar. So if you have any questions, comments, you can post those actually in the chat and we'll be watching for the chat. And so I want to welcome Gardenia. I want to welcome Lynn. I want to welcome Lisa. Already said hi to Rory, Akeem. And again, we have somebody that's called in and I have a phone number. So, so welcome whoever you are. Glad that you're with us this evening. And so I am going to actually turn it over to Adam for a moment, and I'm going to let him tell you about himself and what it is that he does. And he's also going to post in the chat how you can connect with him. So Adam, over to you.
Sure. Yeah. So I, by day, I am a mortgage broker, and I specialize in mortgages for investment and commercial clients. And then I also have a long-term rental and a short-term rental that I have as well. And I have a management company that runs a short-term rental. And so that is my connection to short-term rentals, as well as we lend on them. So we have some creative solutions for short-term lending, including DSCR lending, which is debt service coverage ratio lending. That's where we use the income and the expenses of the property to qualify the loan rather than your personal income. It's a great solution if you're just getting started, or if you have unusual income because you're an investor and you know, you're flipping houses and the numbers just don't add up on your tax returns for a Fannie or Freddie loan. This DSCR solution is a great solution. So I will put my contact information out there. We also do hard money and full commercial underwriting. So we have a whole variety of options. I'd be happy to help you with any of your lending needs for investment. I will put my contact information out there for you. Yeah, that's me in a nutshell.
All right. Perfect, Adam. Thank you. Thank you. I met Adam a while back and we just connected as soon as we met. I think our personalities meshed very well together. And, a little epilogue to our story is, Adam, I was just sharing this with Andora earlier today. Adam had invited me to his birthday party and I thought, "Ooh, I'm in the inner circle now. I get to go to the birthday party." And so I met his family and found out that when I was 20, and of course I'm now in my 60s. So 40 years ago, I was friends with his grandfather and did not even make the connection until at the birthday party that I had been friends with his grandfather, and it was all about real estate back then. And so, gosh, what a small world we live in that I came full circle and met Adam. And so there you go.
Yeah, so, that's awesome.
Yeah. Isn't that a great story? I love that story. You remember that night when the light bulb came on and I was like, what?
Actually, I don't. It was a really great party, but.
Anyway, it was a lot of fun. And I feel even more connected to Adam because I knew his grandfather, and his grandfather kind of took me under his wing and imparted all of his wisdom on me a 20-year-old kid. So that was just kind of a fun story looking back. Anyway, I have 24 rental properties. I have long-term rentals. I have short-term rentals. I have midterm rentals. I have commercial rentals, residential. So I'm kind of all over the map. I'm a firm believer not to put all of your eggs in the same basket. And so I've been, down all those paths and with all the different zoning options. And so if you have any questions, just go to kathybenner.com, click through. There's a way that you can actually connect a strategy call with me that is totally free if you just want to chat with me and have some questions. So put your questions here in the chat so we can answer as many questions as you have tonight that we can. But if we're some reason you're not comfortable doing that, or you didn't get a turn to ask your question, please feel free to connect with me on a strategy call, and I'll be happy to answer the questions for you. So with that, I am going to introduce you to Andora Marshall. Again, like I said, she is on my advisory board for my company, Kathy Bitter Companies, where I hold all of my rentals, and she's on my advisory board. So she and I talk, not every day, but some weeks it's every day, and you just never know. You know, so we're always sharing ideas, and we're always sharing deals and tenant information and questions. And so, you know, we connect quite a bit. And so Andora, tell us a little bit about your background, your backstory, before you even started investing in any kind of real estate. I know Andora has some long-term, short-term, she's now looking at midterm. And so what was your background before you got into the real estate industry at all?
So that is a great question. And this was one that I think is very hopeful for people. So when I first started, I started in 1989, and my mother had passed away and had given her mother's home to my brother, my sister, and myself. So our first rental was given to us in Athens, Ohio, which is a college town, if you're familiar with Athens, Ohio, with a high university. So that was our first rental. I did that, and that was with my brother and my sister. So I did that for a while. And then I continued to do that with them. And then in 1990, I bought my own first home. And then I thought, well, you know what? I think I can make money at this. But keep in mind, at that time, when I first started out, I was a secretary for a large utility company. I only made like $30,000+. So, you know, and I guess what I want to say is that if anyone can do it on that money, anybody can do it. And so literally it was just taking that first investment and then using the equity out of my home. And then eventually my brother and my sister, I decided that to sell that house. And then I went ahead and took some of the money from that and started buying houses in Carroll, Ohio, which were single family homes. And then, so I really felt like I've been, you know, that's been my bread and butter. And then when the pandemic hit, we decided, you know what, back up a bit. Before the pandemic hit, my husband and I always wanted to have a beach property. So we decided that we were going to look for beach property. So in 2013, we started looking, and we found an area that we absolutely loved. And we knew, okay, with being out of town, there wasn't a lot of information on Airbnbs. And at that time, it was called HomeAway. So we found a really a condo that probably nobody wanted. And it was in St. Petersburg, Florida. So that was our first long-term rental. And we had that from 2014 to 2021. And then during the pandemic, I decided to buy offices. So I bought some offices to kind of get into. And then I also had bought a condo before that. And then now I want to get into midterm renting. And I know for a fact we are going to buy another short-term rental someplace, but it's got to be warm on the beach. So I've been doing long-term rentals since 1989. And then flip forward, I'm thinking, okay, it's definitely, I love this whole short-term. And one of my dreams, Kathy, I think you and I talked about this, is as a little girl, I wanted to have a bed and breakfast. I always thought that would be cool because I lived in a small town, and I thought, oh, this is going to be so fun because people are going to pass through and you can get to meet new people all the time. And so anyway, enough about me. I'm rambling now at this point, but so I've been doing long runs for a while.
Well, you're kind of like me. I was 12 when I told my mom that I was going to retire someday and run a bed and breakfast. Now, I didn't even know what a bed and breakfast was at the time. I'm sure I read it in a book or something at age 12. Sure. I mean, I'd barely, you know, been off the farm. So I've never stayed at a bed and breakfast. My parents, you know, we didn't have the money or either that, or they weren't into it, but we just didn't travel.
Sure.
And so when I said I wanted to, you know, run a bed and breakfast someday, my mom even said, "What's that?" And I remember explaining to her at age 12 what I thought it was. I'm not sure. Sure. I had accurate. But anyway, so that's funny that you had that same thought.
Oh, I always, you know, I love talking to people. I love traveling. And, you know, I've always, you know, and it even kind of goes back even further just with the whole travel industry, meeting new people. I thought, oh, that would be so fun to like open your house up and have people come in and you learn about them and they learn about you. And yeah, so I've always thought that would be a fun thing to do.
Well, so for the listeners that are listening, I actually did that. Once I retired, I actually turned the house that I live in into a bed and breakfast. And so we do have guests that come in from all around the world. It slowed down tremendously through the pandemic, but now it's picking up again. I'm full almost every weekend. I'm as full as I want to be. And then Mark and I are traveling more and more. And so when we travel, and we'll get into that in a little bit, but I have a way that I can block off all of the online travel agencies. And it just kind of shows, it looks like we're full if a guest tries to find us. But what I'm doing is I'm actually closing down the B&B. So when we travel, I don't have to worry if somebody's coming or going or can't get through the door or whatever. So I just kind of do that so that we have some free time. But so I'm as busy as I like, you know, I can be busier, but I'm pretty darn comfortable right now. So I love it. You can, and that's the point that I want to say to our listeners is you can dial it up or down, whatever fits your lifestyle and whatever fits however hard you want to work. You can even farm the whole thing out and let somebody else manage it like Adam does.
Yeah.
Adam has a short-term rental and he just pays somebody to do it. So he doesn't have to worry about whether he's home or not home. And so you can do it all different ways. So how did you decide, Andorra, that you wanted to buy the condo there in St. Pete? Were you price driven? Were you location driven? What was the driving force that made you decide that particular condo?
So that is a great question. So all of those things, actually. I was price driven because I'm like, I'm doing something different. And, you know, we wanted to enjoy the beach. We wanted to have that so we could go to on vacation and use it when we wanted. But we also wanted it to be a moneymaker. We knew that that made the most sense. So actually, our neighbors here in Pickerington, they bought a condo in St. Petersburg, Florida. And so they were telling us how great it was and how they were doing this thing. And at that time, it was called HomeAway. So it wasn't Airbnb that we were using in 2014, but HomeAway. And that was just another online digital. So they're like, yeah, you can enjoy your condo. And when you're working full time back in Ohio, then you can, you know, rent out your condo. I'm like, how do you do that? Like, what do you do with your personal stuff? So it was our neighbors that told us that they had bought a condo in St. Petersburg, Florida. And the great thing about that was, is they already had all these contacts to contractors, your HVAC, your electrical person, you know, and that when we talked about these cool ways that you could furnish your condo from living in Columbus, Ohio, they gave us all these tips and tricks to all that. So that's, we kind of chose it based on the location, based on the fact that you could get on a plane. You know, we knew that, okay, how long is it going to take us? So that's something you want to consider. Is it a 4-hour plane ride? Is it a 16-hour drive? So we wanted something that we could drive if we wanted to within a day, and something where we could hop on a plane like Southwest and be there, because it's like an hour and a half to Tampa, Florida. And then now they have Allegiant Air, which flies right into St. Petersburg. So those are huge considerations when you're looking to get an Airbnb or home away, something of that nature, a short-term rental out of state. You want to really think about how close is it for me to hop in the car, or what is the plane trip like? You know, how long is it and how expensive is it? So those are some that was our big considerations. And price was huge. We didn't know what we were getting into, and we didn't want to overextend ourselves. So we got the condo that I think nobody really wanted in this complex, because the man had been in a nursing home and we literally had to gut it and start over. So price for sure.
Yep. I get it. I get it. I was afraid, you know, I always want to dip my toe in the water, so to speak.
Yes.
And I was afraid to jump in and have too big of an investment if I decided that I wanted to walk away from it or didn't want to do it, wanted to sell it, whatever. So we started with a single wide mobile home in Zephyr Hills, Florida, is how we actually got started. And I was just looking online and I found this single wide for $7,000. And I was like, what are you going to get for $7,000? And it was an older mobile home. It was only one bedroom. And I called the guy because it was for sale by owner. And I called the guy and he said, yeah, and kind of like you, he said, my dad had lived there and he's now in a nursing home. And he said, he'll never come back to that. And so he said, at this point, he said, I just need, and he, his words, not mine. He said, I just need to dump it. And so I said, would you take $5,000 for it? He said, send me a check. So I bought that single wide for $5,000. Mark and I lived in that down there for 3 years. We lived half time in Ohio and half time in Florida. And we used that little single wide mobile home for 3 years. And it was everything we needed. And, but anyhow, all of our friends, and like Indora, we wanted to go to the beach. You know, you're in Florida. You want to go to the beach.
Yes.
And so, so we kept driving to the Gulf side. We kept driving to the coast. And finally Mark said, wouldn't it be great if we could like live closer to the coast? And I'm like, oh, feel like I could afford that. Right. And so I started looking just as a hobby.
Sure.
And again, totally price driven. And like Andorra, I think I found this little condo that nobody else wanted. The whole building, it was built in 1974. And our unit was the one and only little unit that no one had updated since 1974. And so, it had parquet peel and stick tile on the floor, if that tells you anything.
Ooh.
And so, I know Adam's cringing. So anyhow, we got it for the right price. And so again, you know what, when you go to update or upgrade some of these properties, it just doesn't cost that much if you're just doing cosmetic upgrades. It just doesn't cost that much. And so we thought, you know, all the condos in that complex were around $100,000 for a one bedroom, which again, isn't bad.
No.
We're only 10 minutes from the beach, but I got mine for 52 and it's a one bedroom. There's no way I was going to spend $50,000 upgrading this one bedroom. So we've put in some new flooring and gave everything a coat of paint. And so now we're updating the kitchen and we're going to have under 10,000 in our upgrade total.
Okay.
And so we'll end up having 62 all in. And now the condos in that complex are going for 120 to 150,000 each in that complex. And we're going to be 62 all in. So you can still find some deals. Don't let anybody tell you that there's no more deals out there. And Adam does mortgage lending and he sees deals all the time come across.
Yeah.
So there's still deals out there. So you wanted to have a short term. You found the perfect property. What did you have to do, Andorra, for zoning to make sure that you could do what you wanted to do with it?
Another great question. So this is huge, especially in Florida. Many people don't realize this, but when they go to Florida, the Carolinas, just anywhere now, that there are a lot of zoning, planning and zoning that prohibit Airbnb. So the number one thing is to work with a realtor who knows the area, who's familiar with, let them know right off the bat. You want to work with an investor-friendly realtor who is familiar with somebody who wants to do an Airbnb. So that's the number one thing, because you want that realtor to do the legwork for you and get into those deed restrictions and make sure that, you know, you can do Airbnb. So that's huge, you know, to make sure that. And then you also, once you have confirmed that they allow that, many places, like our particular place, stated that you couldn't rent any more than to one person, you know, or a family or whatever, every 30 days. So that meant in total, I could have 12 people, you know, 12 times where I rented out the condo. So luckily, we, you know, there's high seasons in Florida, and our high season in Florida was January to April. And that, you know, we tried to make it as much money as we could. Now, and again, you just have to kind of think about this when you're purchasing. Can you afford to make that payment when, you know, you just want to make it reasonable? But those are some of the considerations. A, can you rent it out? B, because you hate to buy something and then find out, oh, you can't use it as an Airbnb. That, you know, that could be, that's very, very important to learn that, I would say.
Yes, I agree. And so when we bought ours, that, again, that was one of our big questions to the HOA, because number one, we have, you know, you've got the state of Florida, so they're going to have a Florida revised code. And then you're going to have whatever city or municipality that you're in, and they're going to have some zoning codes. And then you're going to have, if it's a condo or if it's in one of those mobile home parks, you're going to have an HOA, and the HOA will have some rules. And so you kind of have to just start at the top with whatever state you want to invest in, and then just go to the municipality that you're going to be in. And then if there's an HOA that your property is actually in an HOA, a whole association, you're going to have to investigate those rules as well. So like Andorra, ours said that in Florida, Florida says, yes, you can have any kind of short-term rental. It's allowed in the code. Then when ours is actually in between Bradenton and Sarasota, we're not inside Bradenton proper and we're not inside Sarasota proper. We're in between. So we're just in that particular county. So we had to go to the county and say, can we do short-term? And they said, yes. So then we had to go to the HOA that our complex is in, and they said, yes, but unlike you, Andorra, they said, we not only want you to rent it for a minimum of 30 days, but we only want you to do it 2 times a year. So where you could do yours 12 times a year, I can only do mine 2 times a year. And so really that's in Florida, that's still a go. See, that still is not a stopper, because if we have a, what they call a snowbird, somebody that wants to spend the winter in Florida, they usually want it for a couple of months or 3 months or maybe even 4 months. And so we could rent it just twice a year, and we could collect enough in renting it that pays for the entire condo for the entire year. And then the rest of the time we get to use it. So just as an idea on how that might work. I do want to say, everybody that's in the audience, welcome. I want to say welcome again. You are listening to Kathy Benner. I'm a passive income coach, Adam Messmer. He is in mortgage lending. Andorra is with us as our guest this evening. And this is the ins and outs of opening a B&B, a guest house, an Airbnb, a VRBO, or even a midterm rental. And we are talking to Andorra about her experiences. So if you have any questions, put them in the chat and we'll answer them as we go. If you have comments or questions, and if not, you can contact me at kathybenner.com. Or you can get a hold of Adam. He has in the chat, Adam at lfglending.com. And then he also has his Calendly link there if you want to connect with him as well. And so my next question for Andorra is, when you started this short-term rental there in St. Pete, how did you get your bookings? And did it change over time, or were you, did you just do just, I think it was called Home Away at the time, or did you ever eventually get on several OTAs? How did that work for you?
So what we did was we chose at that time, because this is going back to 2014. So we went with Home Away, and we paid a flat fee. And I believe it was like $250 for the year. But as Home Away grew and became more prominent in the short-term rental, it was $450. So, you know, you want it when you are looking at rentals, or you're looking to do Airbnb, you definitely want to take all these costs into consideration. So we use the digital platform, and we also use bookings.com. I preferred HomeAway because I was able at that time to kind of talk to who was going to rent. You know, they would send over their information and they would have like a little paragraph. I'm so-and-so from Canada. It's just my husband and I, and we would like to rent, you know, your condo, and they would kind of tell you a little bit about themselves. You would get the telephone number, and so you could talk to that individual, you know, to kind of figure out if it's a good fit. And then I created like a system, you know, for you know, how I was going to, you know, process this application, because you have a whole situation. Our condo association required that everybody have an application. They wanted to know the name of the person, everybody that was going to be staying there. So you had to build in all these processes for that. So that's how I did it. And then once I got that information, I actually had to get it approved through my HOA, every guest. So that was, but that was typically my process, is going through bookings.com and HomeAway. And then when you would have repeat guests, they no longer go through HomeAway, because I would have repeating guests from, like, you know, 2014, 15, 16, they would say, hey, can we just book directly with you so we don't have to pay the HomeAway fee? And I'd be like, sure, you know. So that was a great thing, is that you could go kind of go around that.
Well, and that's what happens with snowbirds, is once they're there for like 4 weeks or 6 weeks or 8 weeks, they start to know the neighbors and they want to come back and be with, they make friends and they want to come back and be with their friends every year. And so they'll book the same unit year after year after year. And so once you get a couple of happy snowbirds, you pretty much have your unit filled as for as long as you want it to be.
Absolutely. That's very true.
Yeah. So we're looking forward. Ours is going to launch in this coming January, not, you know, this past January, we weren't quite ready with all of our rehab, but this coming January, we're going to be ready. And I already have a gal that already said she wants it for 2 months. So I'm excited.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yep. So that's very exciting for me. So now you got the booking, you've got them approved, you're going through all of that. What sure. is your check-in? Describe your check-in process. How do you get them in the door when they show up once they're all approved and they're ready to go?
That's another great question. So our particular complex had a gate and a pass, and I didn't want to have to mess with keys, like mailing keys to Canada. So what we did was we mounted a lock box on the exterior of the home. And I know some people are using digital keys. We were going to use a digital keys, but again, this is 2014 to 2021, and you've got salt water. And sometimes I was worried about the digital lock and not being effective. So we would put mounted a lock box on the outside of the wall. We put a key in there. And when I would book them, I would welcome them and say, here is the code to get into the gate. And then they would use that code. And then when you get to the condo, here's the code for the lockbox. And I had a welcome book right on the countertop. And I would literally have like these little baskets that you can buy from like the Dollar Tree. And I'd have like their pool passes in there. And then, you know, I would say, hey, after you've got in, here's the keys to the condo, you know, and I would have it on like one of those little wiry rings that they could put around their wrist. Because yeah. I imagine a lot of people are, you know, out and about. And so I would put that like on their, give it to them so they could have it on their wrist, and they loved that. And I would have them put the key in the lockbox, because in that they lost it or something happened, they had a backup plan, you know. And then they also had like a little key card once they got into that gate that first time, then, you know, they didn't have to keep using that code. But they also knew if they forgot it at home, if they called it, it would let them in, you know.
So you had all your bases covered, because you're long distance. There's no way you're going to drive over and let them in. So you're too far away to handle that. So you had to think of some backup solutions, because sure. you know, it's going to yeah. happen.
It's going to happen. And that's where I was going to, and maybe you'll ask this question later. That's where we'll talk about the importance of whomever's cleaning your condo, your home or whatever. But then we also had neighbors, like I said, that had bought a condo there. So they already had a lot of established relationships. So we always knew that if something happened, you know, that we had these backup plans, and that's exactly what you have to have. And I always recommend, when you know that we had a checkout time of 10 a.m. and we had our check-in time at 3 p.m. And there's all reasons and around this, you know, but the reason was we always made ourselves available at that 3 p.m. checkout just in case. And we would always communicate with the guests and let them know, hey, what time do you think you might arrive? The condo is open at 3. Are you coming in on a plane? And if so, what time? Because we always wanted to make sure we didn't have to be available, but consciously we would try to be available. If you're self-managing, that's some of the things that you kind of have to do, is be available for those guests. And that typically the problems happen right as they're getting into the condo, or right as they're leaving, or within those first 2 hours.
Yes. I can see that. So that is very important. So now once they're in and you got them through the door, everything's good. What did you leave for them inside the condo as far as, I mean, we're calling Airbnb, and a lot of people still think, well, if it's Airbnb, that means bed and breakfast.
Sure.
Do you actually leave them anything for breakfast?
So what we did is, you know, we would always call it like a little welcome packet, so to speak. We always made sure that we had the kitchen fully stocked, and the fact that they could cook all the, toasters and appliances. There's a whole list of things that you really have to have. And then we would also keep like sugar, some things that were in packets. You know, the health department won't allow you, they don't like you to kind of put like a bag of sugar in there, but if they're individually wrapped, that's an important thing to know. And we would make sure that they had coffee filters. We would give them a bottle of wine. We put it in the refrigerator and say, welcome. And then sometimes if, you know, we would have the cleaning person, because that's the key, to make sure that she would put chocolate on the bed. You know, if it was the guests that were coming back for several years, we would like send them a nice little card and say, you know, thank you for coming back and thank you for choosing us, you know, and then we'd like have the bottle of wine in the refrigerator chilling. And then we would sometimes put snacks out, like you can get snacks from Walmart or Sam's Club. And we would try to do something like that. Things that are not perishable that can be, you know, literally taken out of the owner's closet and put there for the guests.
Great ideas. Yeah, those are some great ideas. Okay, take notes, guys, all of you that are listening. So where did you get all of your bed linens? Because those, after a while, you have to, you know, you have to work new ones in and you know, get some of the. And again, here's just my observation. Sometimes when you go to a short-term rental, whether it's an Airbnb or a full-blown bed and breakfast or a VRBO, sometimes the linen's clean, but if it's just, I don't want to use the word old, but sometimes, let me use this word. Sometimes the linen looks tired.
Yes. Yeah. And I always would try to avoid that. Yeah. Here's a couple of different things that we would do. I love Kohl's sheets, but then now you got Amazon and they have all those great sheets. And here's another thing. We had two bedrooms and two bathrooms. So we had four sets of queen sheets. And the importance of that is that we always knew that the cleaning person was cleaning one, they could take the other one with them. And then we would put the spare, or sometimes she'd have them both washed up, one on the bed and one in the closet. And I always like to get white or off-white, because nothing is better. And then I would have her take, what do you call that stuff that you spray? That's like a little room deodorizer that you can put on your, like a fabric spray. I'd always say, please put this on top of the bed. And she would also do those little fancy towels and stuff, but it doesn't really matter as long as the towel is clean. I think the linens should be, personally, I think they should be white, so you can bleach them and use that hot water. And then if you see that they're getting aging, you make sure that you tell your cleaner, hey, here's a brand new queen set size sheets here in the owner's closet. And here's the key. If these look like they're raggedy, get rid of them. And the same thing with the towels. I mean, you can get great towels from Kohl's. I just saw this week where Macy's was having great sales on sheets for like $39.99.
I saw that.
And then they had all these bed sets that were on sale. And then I can tell you time and time again, like the thing that we would always get complimented on was how clean and crisp everything looked. You know, people really want that. And I think it's important to invest in fairly nice towels, even though they're going to come up missing, because it's going to happen. It's the cost of doing business. But I think having that thicker towel, if you get the thin ones, I don't think that goes as well. People want nice washcloths and towels. Now, we chose white, but I will tell you, with makeup and stuff, sometimes that doesn't always bode as well, right? Some people are using the makeup removers for that and keeping that right there.
I think, you know, you have to make everything easy for the guests, because they will follow the path of least resistance because they're on vacation.
Yes.
Ada just posted. She said, hi, Kathy and all the panelists. She said, would it make sense to buy new bed sets and small TVs and basics to rent out two rooms within a home as an Airbnb or other short-term rental arrangement if I can only do so for a maximum of 3 to 4 months? Rooms are otherwise empty, clean, and freshly painted, and empty at this time, but would need minimal furniture to be ready for guests and listing. If your plan is to run a short-term rental, again, are you saying, and I guess this is my question to Ada, are you saying that you can only rent it for 3 to 4 months according to either your HOA or zoning, Or are you saying that you only have somebody that's interested for 3 to 4 months? Because if you want to rent it for longer, then just get it set up, get it ready to go. Because there's no rhyme or reason when folks rent. You think, oh, they're only going to rent this time, or they're only going to rent. They'll if they're traveling there for some reason, they'll rent. So I would just get it set up and ready to go. Now, if you're only allowed to rent for 3 to 4 months, are you using it in the meantime? And if so, you can still furnish it. And if it's a vacation property, use it yourself. The thing that we're doing, and here was my big aha for me, and I don't know if it was for you or not, Andorra, but, oh, she says, I will likely be relocating in 4 months. Buy stuff that you're going to want to keep. Yes. If you want to furnish it and rent it for now, just furnish it with, you know, kind of keep it sparse, you know, just the necessities, but stuff that you can then, you know, infuse into your own furniture. But for me, of course, you have to have a bed because it's a bed and breakfast, Airbnb. Yes. And so the first thing that I did in here in my home, I run a short-term rental and we're getting ready to do our condo in Florida. I ordered from Amazon. I put the entire mattress in one of those zip bags that can be sanitized. So I put the mattress inside that. It takes two people kind of to put that on.
Yeah. Mark's
helped me put on a couple. My daughter Jen's helped me put on some. They're not too terribly hard if you have two people. And you can just work that right up over your mattress and zip it up. And it does several things. Number one, there's several on Amazon that do not feel like plastic. So they don't crinkle when you sit on them. You know what I'm talking about? Because you don't want your guests to go, what am I sitting on? So you can't really tell that they're on the bed, but it keeps the bed clean because now you can actually do a spray sanitizer on those and wipe them down in between guests before you make the bed up. And so it keeps anything from going through onto your mattress.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps the bed bugs out.
Yes.
We have to talk about bed bugs, especially if you're in an HOA where you've got lots of units and lots of people coming and going and lots of short-term rentals. And again, it's not that the person maybe even has bed bugs at home. They may have picked it up in their luggage on the airplane.
Yes.
You know, if you've ever seen how they pile all the luggage together, you know, you never know. And so as for me, we automatically, and again, I've got a lot of years in the hotel industry, and I worked on the front desk and in management of hotels for several, many years, over 20 years. And so the hotels, they just have a routine maintenance program where they spray. And so we picked up on that and we do the same thing. We just have a maintenance program. And that way you just never have to worry about it. And so now it keeps the bed bugs, those bags keep the bed bugs from actually going down into and in around that mattress. And you can actually see them if you have any. And we've never had any, thank goodness, some wood to knock on. We've never had any, but I have seen them in the hotels that I worked in before. And you can see them. If you look close enough, you can, with a bright flashlight or a bright light, you can see them down in the little, the little creases of the mattresses. Mm-hmm. So anyway, if you're going to do this, check for that. And just get on some sort of a maintenance program. You can do it yourself. You know, you can buy the spray and do it yourself, or you can hire a company to do it, but get on a maintenance program and put your mattresses in a zipper bag from Amazon. So those are my ahas. But as far as Ada, it sounds like you're wanting to maybe make some money on it until you can relocate there. Absolutely. You know, do some minimal furnishings that you want to keep. That way you don't have stuff that you're going to throw away. It's stuff that you can incorporate right into your own furniture, when you decide to relocate. How did you find a good person to do your cleaning? And did you have to go through a lot of different cleaning companies before you got the perfect one? That's the big complaint I hear all the time, is they either don't clean the way you want them to, or they kind of flake on you when you've got a guest checking in and it didn't get clean. There seems to always be a problem with cleaning. How did you find that perfect cleaning company?
So I don't know that there's really any perfect cleaning company. I'll be honest with you. Here's another thing too, why it's important, I think, to go through a realtor who's investor friendly. He or she is going to be a wealth of information. And one of the things is if she understands that you're going to do an Airbnb, she likely is going to have names of people that are cleaning, you know, these different rentals in the area. And so we asked our cleaning person or our realtor, hey, what cleaning companies do you recommend or what individuals? And then, you know, we use that one. Then after, when you get into the complex, let's say it's a condo complex, you know, you start talking to people within the complex. Hey, you know, and you'll meet other people who have Airbnbs. Hey, who is your cleaner or who do you use? Or better yet, if it's a neighbor who lives there all year round, hey, would you be interested in cleaning? I mean, that's like the best of the best. If you can get the neighbor next door or somebody within the complex who's interested, because guess what? When there's a storm rolling in or something, you can call that person and that, you know what I mean? So there's just, you want to use that the cleaning staff is your boots on the ground, especially if you're out of state. So building that relationship with the cleaning person is huge, because they're going to tell you, again, when somebody leaves, you know, with something broken, with something damaged, because they have the eye, they're going to notice there's something missing, you know, but you're going to have to expect for, you know, like I said, towels are probably going to come up missing, not because people intend to, but if you're in a beach location, they take them to the pool. Sometimes your silverware, because they're taking them to the pool, and your coffee mugs and your plates, it just happens. And the best place to buy those, I'm telling you, is Walmart, Correll dishes all the way and get the white, because they never break. And you can find a good deal on a whole package of Correll dishes, like sometimes for $24.97. But right now I've seen the price edging up. But again, it goes back to that cleaning person, because she's going to be your eyes and ears, or he or she is, into the property. She's going to let you know when things go wrong, but you also want to have a list for that person. Tiny little things that you wouldn't expect, such as you want to give them a kind of routine maintenance. Hey, please check the light bulbs of all the things. So we keep light bulbs. Please check the batteries to the remotes and the TVs. Please check the fire smoke detectors. Make sure that those have it, or even your thermostat, which it also has a battery. So we would ask that person continuously to do these things, and they would do it, you know, gladly, but you have a checklist. This is, and kind of let them know. But then also when you are doing an Airbnb, a lot of people will have a list for their guests. I saw some people that where they would say, hey, please strip the beds and put them in the, you know, and it depends on the area and how it's being done. And you can kind of find that out when you're talking to others, you know, there. But really that, like I said, that cleaning person is key. And to your point about the zippered mattress things, that's huge. And you can get those fairly inexpensive, but we also zippered our mattresses in. And then we also put that pad on top of it as well. You can get those cushy ones now that have plastic on the other side, but then they have that cushion on top, you know, and it's worth the investment. And pillowcases, you can get those from the zippered pillowcases. You want those as well. And Walmart, again, has great deals on that.
Yep, I agree. And again, and what I said before, sometimes the linen just starts to look tired. And when the linen starts to look tired, it comes across to the guest as being dirty.
Yep.
When it isn't, maybe it's been just freshly laundered, but if it's starting to get faded and get a little ratty on the edges, it just makes the guest feel like it's not clean. And really it's just been used a lot, even though, because you're washing this stuff between every guest. And so it gets a lot of laundering. So just keep in mind, you know, to keep things nice and fresh. And sometimes if a cleaning person or even myself here, where I'm running, you know, the B&B in my house, I get kind of blind to it, you know, because I see it all the time and I'm like, oh, it's okay. And so sometimes, and again, we like to travel, which is good for me, because when we travel and I go somewhere, it wakes me up a little bit. And then when I come home, I'm like, oh, I need to get some new towels. I need to get some new comforters. That place we stayed was awesome. And mine's starting to look a little tired. So it's time to retire those and get some new ones. So Adam, I know you've got a company that actually manages for you. How often, because you're seeing the invoices every month, how often are they infusing new linens and new towels and stuff into your short-term rental?
It feels like every month.
I get it.
I mean, you're like, what? Yeah. I feel that, yeah, I mean, there's, I feel like there's always something that comes up. So, I mean, not just towels and linens, mm-hmm. but the things that I'm shocked that people just take with them or destroy is amazing. Like frying pans. I feel like I bought more frying pans in the last year than ever in before in my life.
Are you buying like some copper coated pan that everybody loves and they decide to take it home?
No, these are like $20. I mean, $20 for like a set of three, I think is what it is.
Okay.
And of various sizes, but people just, and honestly, like, I don't get too deep into the details, but they're either just completely destroying them or taking them. And it's just the weirdest thing. I don't know why.
Where is your short term? I'm just curious by that, because is it in a beach area?
No. So something that we've talked about before is kind of the difference between destination spots and what I call utility spots. So a destination spot is the beach, right? Or the mountains, someplace. Yeah, you're going for that. Utility spot is what I've got, which is a place in central Columbus. It's in an area called the Old North. Mm-hmm. And so it's just north of campus. So people will mm-hmm. come, not because of my house, but just because it's close to everything. And the other challenge that we get is combating parties and trying to prevent parties from happening because it is close to campus. So I think that is a piece of it, but, sure. And I will say the nice thing is, you know, when if there's something like significant, like, I don't even know the story of what happened, but we had a couple claims of around $200, from Airbnb. And, I mean, they pay them like it, mm-hmm. it claim and they pay them and it's fine. So it's not, that big a deal, and I'm not personally dealing with it, which is nice. So I highly recommend a manager for that. I will say margins on that utility play have gotten a lot thinner. So you know, if you have a destination location in mind, like if I were to get into it right now, that's what I would shoot for, something that's like a place where people want to be, not just, oh, it's close to stuff. Because I think there's been such an influx of people into this that those utility plays are a lot harder to make profitable, especially if you're using a manager.
Rory has his hand up, or her. Is Rory a he or a her? I'm not sure. Rory, put your question in the chat and we'll answer it for you. Your question or comment. Yes. Ada says, where would you all suggest to get inexpensive yet quality mattress plus bed frame, nightstand, and TVs for her aforementioned situation where she wants to, put her contents in there, but then once she relocates, she'll infuse those contents into her own stuff. Gosh, I don't know. The last time I bought mattresses, believe it or not, Sam's Club has some pretty decent beds.
Absolutely.
And for a great price. So check out Sam's Club for those mattresses. And I think you can do the bed frame there as well. But the other stuff, gosh, TVs, I was at Walmart the other day. They're doing the TVs for like under $200. It's amazing. Rory wants to know, Adam, how much do you pay for your property manager for your Airbnb? And you're welcome. He's been a speaker for us. You're welcome to name drop if you want.
Sure. Yeah. It's Housepitality. So house, the word Housepitality, they'll play on words. Housepitality.io is their website. And they're charging about 25%. I want to say 25. It's something like that. Right in there. Okay. So I do have a shout out for another company that specializes in Hocking Hills. Yeah. And a good buddy of mine, Justin Keys, he just started that. And it's called Hocking Hosts. And I'm writing this one down
because I just bought one in Hocking Hills.
Yeah. Now they're going to have a minimum revenue expectation, I think. So it depends on your project. So like if you're going for a bigger project, that's going to do I mean, I don't know exactly what that revenue, it might be 100 grand a year. So if you, if you're doing 100 grand a year, then it might be worth it. But he's only charging like 20%.
And what's his name, Justin?
Justin Keys. So he has, yeah, Keys. He's the guy. Do you remember, do you watch Hocking Hills properties that much?
Yes.
A lot?
Yes.
Okay. So like a year and a half ago, there was this like palatial estate, and it was super weird because like it sold for like 500, and then like a month later it was listed for 600, and it ended up going for like 800, and he bought it. It was sweet. It was like a giant main house, and then a section of it was like underground, but like underground isn't the right word. There was a lawn on top of it, and then there was an above ground space. So it was
kind of embedded into the hillside.
Embedded into the hillside. Yeah.
Yes.
It was really awesome. It's what's funny is another friend of mine was trying to buy it. They were looking at it, but yeah, he ended up going like 200 over asking. And long story short, he ended up putting like 100 grand into it. And just, I mean, it's a show place. And he has like UFC fighters and celebrities and stuff that stay there. And he's just killing it. It's incredible. It's got a pool and a pond. And I think
so for those of you that are, for those of you that are listening, Hocking Hills is a tourist area just below Columbus, Ohio. And it's full of caves and waterfalls. And it's, you know, and it, again, it's got its name Hills. And it's a beautiful, beautiful area. And folks come from all around to go hiking and camping and hanging out there. So, so that's, and I just bought a property down there. And we have a long-term renter in it now because we had to drill a well and do some stuff to the property. But if and when that person ever decides to move on, we are definitely going to short-term rent that. We bought it as a short-term rental. So, so that's in the future for us.
Did you see Forbes made Hocking Hills like one of the best places to travel in like the world? Did you see that?
Really?
Yeah.
I did not see that.
Yeah. It is. I'll see if I can find the article. And if I can,
that's because of Justin's property, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But like it was, here's like an ABC 600 site, maybe the link directly to the article. But yeah, like it like cracked like the top 50 places in the world or something. Which was here, I'll put it, here's a local article. It's not the exact Forbes article, but they talk about it. And
interesting.
Yeah, it's
how nuts. Fun is that? Yeah.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. How fun is that? I love it. Oh, yeah. So anyhow, we were lucky enough. And again, I'm price driven. We were lucky enough to find a property down there. We needed to put some money into it. Again, we're all in at under 80,000 and we're sitting on an acre and a half right in the heart of Hocking Hills. So, I like to say that we're kind of sitting pretty on that one, because I can do long-term, short-term. I can do all kinds of stuff with that one. So I'm excited for that. So how can our listeners get in touch with all of us? And again, for me, you can just go to kathybinner.com. And I'm going to put that back in the chat again in case somebody scrolled past it already. And we've got Adam's contact information up here. I'm going to scroll back up here and see if I can find it. Yeah, I don't know if I can copy all of yours at once and move it down or not, Adam. Maybe.
So do you see that question where they're asking about midterm rentals? I think someone's wanting to know. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I sure can. Let me scroll back down. It says, will you talk about midterm rentals? I'm not familiar with them. Yes, Rory, a midterm rental. And let me go back and just kind of give you the overview. I'm going to give you the 30,000 foot view of rental properties. You have long-term rentals. You can buy a single family, you can buy a duplex, you can buy a fourplex, you can buy a whole apartment building. And those are going to be long-term rentals. And you would research your area and find out what are rents going for in your area for the square footage of your property. And you can pick a nice happy medium in there and put it out on the market and you can rent it all day long. A midterm rental is kind of the same thing, but you're going to totally furnish it. I call it a hybrid between a short term and a long term, because you're going to totally furnish it like you would a short term, but you're going to rent it for more than 30 days, but less than a year. And it's for traveling professionals. It could be for some big CEO company guys that are coming through that have to be, in town for 6 months because they're opening a new company or a new factory. It could be for traveling medical professionals that hospitals are bringing in because they're short staffed. So they're bringing somebody in for 26 weeks or longer. And so that's what's considered a midterm. And so it's more than 30 days, but it's less than a year, and you're going to get about double the rent that you would get from a long term. But number one, you're going to pay all the utility bills and you're going to furnish it. And number two, you are going to have to flip it every so many weeks, maybe every 3 months, every 6 months, depending on how long your person is there. And then you have short term rentals, which you're definitely going to have furnished, to the point where you're going to, do the dishes in the cupboard in the whole nine yards. And with short term, you're going to get about four times the rent. But keep in mind, the more rent you collect, the more work it is, because now in a short term is considered anything less than 30 days. And so in reality, when I rent out my condo in Florida to a snowbird that wants to come, say, for 3 months, it actually, by terms, it's considered a midterm rental because they're there for more than 30 days, but less than a year. We call it a short term, but it's really, by definition, a midterm rental, because short term, by definition, is less than 30 days. So I hope that clears it up for you. It's not too confusing unless you've not heard that term before. Any other questions? It says, Kathy, what are the dates and titles of your various private group meetings in March? Isn't there an Airbnb group? You can go to kathybinner.com. All of that is scheduled right inside my website at kathybinner.com. You can scroll down. I have 8 different lanes. You can go through and click on all the free stuff, and all the free stuff will give you the date, the time, and the Zoom code to tap in. So thanks for asking that, Ada. Yes. Did I miss any questions?
I'm looking. I don't think so. I think you've got them all.
Okay. All right. So any aha for anybody in the audience? Did you have an aha moment in our conversation tonight? Like, yeah, I can't wait to get started, or no, I don't think I want to do that.
It's true.
Any aha moments out there? Mine, I think, is like Adam. I think, yeah, if I'm going to buy any more, I like the Hocking Hills or the one that I have in Sarasota, or like Andorra and St. Pete, I think I would go for a destination location for the short term. Because you can always go backward. If it doesn't do well, you can always turn it into a midterm. If that doesn't work for you, you can always then step back and do it as a long term. So my advice is, when you're working your numbers, make sure that the numbers work as a long-term rental. Say, if all else fails and I have to just rent this thing out, can I rent it for enough to cover all my cost? So just make sure that you've got all your costs covered. You don't want to get in upside down. You don't want to get in over your head. All right, folks, I really appreciate everybody being with us tonight. Adam, thank you so much. You were a little, another key factor. Oh, and Dora says, find a good realtor who understands real estate investing in Airbnb. Absolutely. Absolutely. You either have to have a realtor that understands it, or you have to be willing to do the footwork and make sure you don't get a property that you can't use the way you want to use it. Just be sure.
And to your point, even finding out I know when I was in St. Petersburg, Florida, I had to file taxes every month, even if no one stayed there, with the state of Florida. And then I also had to file them for Pinellas County. Even if it was zero, I had to go in there and fill out the form. So it's really about systematizing all your things once you get in there, and knowing what you can do and what you can't do, and what the rules and regulations are.
And I can help all of you with that. If there's anyone in the audience that has specific questions, get in touch with me through KathyBenner.com. I can walk you through all of that because I do the bed tax and the sales tax, and I can tell you the breakdown and how that works. I do the different inspections. I work with zoning. I do all of those things. So I can help you with all of that. Or be like Adam and just hire a management company.
Yeah, right. You get, it's an option. Option one
is
self-managed. Or option two, find somebody. And I think you said, Adam, that I didn't know it was up to 25% now. I know years ago, when I look back in 2014, it was between 10 to 12% for these, to have somebody manage me.
And in destination places like Hocking Hills, it's like 40%.
Yes. I can't believe that. That's crazy.
That's why Justin thinks he's going to clean up, because at 20%, I mean, who wouldn't?
Well, but you also have to understand the companies that are charging 40%, like in Hocking Hills, they're doing your maintenance too.
You
should have that. Like that should be part of it. And now you get billed. I mean, I get billed for any kind of maintenance from the management company, but they should have a guy or a handyman or something.
And when you're flipping some of those big properties, I mean, they've got outside fire pits and fireplaces and pools and hot tubs. And so, your companies that are managing that, they're cleaning all of that. They're managing all of that. So it's a lot bigger project. And again, it depends on what piece of the pie you're happy with compared to what you want to spend somebody else to do. It all comes down to time or money. Do you want to spend your time or do you want to spend your money? Yeah. And then just go shopping for the best ratio that works for you.
Mm-hmm. I see Ada has another question. She wants to know, do management companies take their payment gross off the top before taxes, cleaning, and any other expenses? So I guess that's for you, Adam.
every management company is going to be a little different on how they calculate it. Mine actually has a fairly complex way to get to it. It's based on which platform also, because certain platform has certain fees and different ways that they pay. And so, I mean, 2025 is general. Now, the cleaning fee typically is a pass-through expense. So whatever the cleaning fee is, you just charge that to the client. And so it doesn't, nobody really makes any money on that other than the cleaner. And then they charge on whatever the gross revenue is net of the cleaning fees. But, as far as taxes, they aren't going to charge you a fee on a tax. So like if we're collecting $25 in tax, they're not going to charge you a fee on that.
They shouldn't be anyway, right?
They shouldn't be.
I mean, so then if, say, for example, if a place, and I'm just going to throw a number out there. So I think what their question is, if the place ran for $2,000, what you have is a line item for taxes. I know I did when I rented my St. Petersburg condo out, I got $3,500 for rent. And then I had a line item for the taxes that I had the guest pay. And then I had a cleaning fee that I had the guest pay. And that was it. And then so if there were any other expenses, that came out of my profit. So I would guess the management companies would do something very similar. They would take it out of that $3,500, not all these other cleaning things. But they're going to be doing the cleaning, so they're going to take that as a line item, right?
Yes. I mean, now my management company contracts with cleaners. So, at the end of the day, if they don't have a contract cleaner, then the guy himself is going to go do it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Because they got to flip that property. But
I know when. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, Kathy.
Well, my advice would be, if you're going to do this and you want to have a management company, is just do a comparison spreadsheet for yourself, just jot down, the high points, and then just ask all the different companies that you interview, how they handle that. And again, you're going to choose the best one for you, but don't forget to look at some reviews, because that's huge, to see if folks have had issues or whether that folks are happy with the services. So check out, it's just like your own, Airbnb, where you're getting reviews. Be sure and check out reviews for the management company.
And, you know, probably even going through sometimes the Better Business Bureau if somebody has a company. But I always think when you're getting any type of service, like especially a cleaning service, word of mouth is always going to be your best, because that means somebody's used them. And then, like I said, I hate to keep going back to that realtor, but whomever sold you that property, you really need to tap into that person and ask them for a lot of resources, especially, you know, if you're here in Ohio and you're wanting to buy one in South Carolina, it's a great time to say, hey, this is what I'm going to do. Do you have a cleaning person? Do you have this? Do you have that? Because they're going to know, and they're going to want to sell you that property. So they're going to want you to be happy. Because guess what? If you sell it later on down the road and they gave you good advice, you're going to go back to them and sell it. So it's only to everybody's, it's a win-win for everybody, right? Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. But if you don't have a realtor that is that familiar, be sure that you do your homework. Just don't get into a property where you get over your head and you can't do what you want to do with it. Make sure that it works.
Yep.
Do your due diligence.
And look at those deed restrictions, or like you said, those the area to make sure that they're going to allow Airbnb, because a lot of places now are starting to really, really have changed their guidelines for that. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
absolutely. Perfect. This has been great conversation. And Dora, thank you so much for being on with us tonight. Adam, thank you for being with us as usual. I always love to see Adam. We're back in town. So I'll see you at some of the networking stuff, Adam.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sounds perfect.
So we'll be out there hanging out. So anyhow, if you want to connect in any of my networking groups or any of the stuff that we're doing, tribe trips, we're always doing something. Just check on KathyBinner.com and click through and join us. So until next time, we will see everyone next month.
All right. Bye.
Bye, guys. Thanks.
Bye.